Welcome to Everything Belongs, a podcast for those living, creating, leading, and thriving while in the deep end of life. I'm your host, Madison Morgan, leadership coach, creative consultant, and speaker. I coach soulful visionaries and go-getting mavericks who desire to create art of their lives and take their work both deeper and higher. In this show, I'll be bringing you an overflow of conversations with my favorite thought leaders, teachers, healers, and creatives who inspire me to live more fully in my own power, worth, and wholeness, along with offering some episodes where I share my own practical insights, behind-the-scenes peeks into my process, and tools I use on my own journey. There will not be much we shy away from here because at this table, everything belongs. Therefore, you can expect me to ask the uncomfortable, juicy questions. You can expect that you'll hear people you disagree with on the podcast and maybe even ideas you've never previously considered. I trust you with your own discernment as we take this deep dive. You can expect to laugh, cry, learn, and be challenged by the guests as they share their diverse experiences and views of the world. It's my hope through learning to see that all of it belongs that you will develop a more sovereign way of holding yourself so you can playfully go after the life, relationships, and career you are made for, to let all parts of yourself have a seat at the table, to lead and create from your deepest truth and become your own source of validation, all because you finally know you're worthy of it. All that's required to get started, that you show up curious and willing. Let's dive in. Well, hello, my friends. I am so thankful to be here with you today. It is a delicious, stormy day here in Springfield, Missouri, where I live. And if you are familiar with the rolling storms in the Midwest, you know how delicious and just cozy it can be to wake up to thunderstorms and rain and just watching all of the peonies like blossom. So that's what's going on in my world right now, just this appreciation of spring and its goodness. And with that goodness, I am so excited to bring you today's episode with Erin Rose. As you will hear, I was so delighted in this episode. I had so much fun with Erin and his heart for humanity, his heart for peace, and that all of us would realize not only that we belong, but that we are deeply loved by God. So this conversation just was so juicy. And if you're not familiar with Erin, Erin is a writer, a speaker, and a diversity and inclusion coach. His work allows people to examine their unconscious biases, peel back layers of programming that prevent them from moving through the world with a mindset of love, unity, and equality. He is committed to both enjoying and changing the world at the same time. His lifelong devotion to social change includes chapters as a youth activist, a community organizer, a diversity and inclusion specialist, conflict resolution mediator, leadership coach for changemakers, and a spiritual advisor for public leaders. These days, he says God is his boss and world peace is his mission. He's here to support anyone who believes in a better world and a more beautiful life. Erin feels that liberation is not only possible but guaranteed if we believe it is so. And in this episode, we speak on how he supports changemakers, how he supports frontline leaders in liberation, in dancing through our own fear and allowing ourselves to be fully seen and coming back to safety in our nervous systems and in our body and in our beliefs over and over again. He talks about how he developed his own relationship with God, which you know I was interested in as a previous evangelical. And I'll be honest, even whenever I first engaged with Erin's work, he used God as a word so freely that I was quite skeptical, because coming from evangelicalism, people who use that language and the language of spirituality really brought me pause. But as I've grown and healed my own relationship with spirit, with God, and my relationship with Christianity, I have really enjoyed connecting with Erin and his work and have found myself neutralizing that language and understanding so much more about how the language of God actually really supports me. So you will hear so much goodness in this episode, not only from what we talked about, I shared with you previously, but on how Erin grew up in New York City. We'll talk about surrendering to the divine, and I'll go into a little bit about my relationship with God and mine and Erin's queerness, gender expression, labels, and how Erin navigates assumptions as a white man in this space. So this conversation is juicy. I have a feeling you're really going to enjoy it. And if you do, it would mean so much if you let me know by either sharing the podcast and your stories on Instagram and tagging me so I can see it and celebrate you and celebrate that you shared, or leaving a review. It means so much to receive reviews on these podcast episodes. I do read each and every one that comes in. So if you leave a review, it is like chef's kiss as a way to leave feedback on this podcast. And so I know what resonates with you. And so I can bring more service to you in this podcast as well. So without further ado, let's hear from Erin Rose. Erin, I'm so thrilled to have you on Everything Belongs. I feel like it's been a long time coming.
Completely. I'm so glad to be here. It feels like such a gift to be having this conversation with you.
Yes. So if someone has never heard of you, never interacted with your work, is outside of the Instagram world, how would you explain the work that you do?
I always say when people ask me this question, I often start like just people, you know, someone at the store, a friend of a friend. I always start by saying I answer this question differently to everybody. And if you have questions, feel free to ask. I think I've really come to a place of releasing that feeling of like being even able to completely define myself in a comprehensive way for other people. But overall, I say I'm here to co-create a world where all of us thrive completely authentically as ourselves. And I do that mostly these days as a leadership coach for public figures, for change makers, folks who are on the front lines of healing the world. And I think at this point, we all have a context for understanding that our world is going through a big shift, even if people's perspectives on that are very different. And so I support the folks who are showing up to dream a new world into existence. And I write, and I often say that I'm also a human being who is committed to both changing and enjoying the world at the same time.
That's beautiful. I'm curious, your passion for leaders and change makers and visionaries, like why those people?
For me, it really feels like a divine assignment. There's just an alignment that has always existed there. I came into social activism very early. By the time I was 14, 15 years old, was already making presentations about things that were going on in the world, issues that I cared about, and petitioning the teachers at my high school to let me give these presentations to their classes. Like, Erin's going to come and give this presentation on this horrifying thing happening in the world and what you guys can do about it. And I always had that just sort of recruitment, rabble rousing, bringing people together in pursuit of a shared dream instinct. And within a couple of years, I was working in activist communities where I was just being put in front of other leaders and saying, hey, we don't have someone to lead this workshop, Erin. Like, here's this random curriculum that someone wrote 3 years ago. Like, you're leading the workshop. And then having these sort of initiatory moments of having people say, wow, I've never felt so seen in a space like that before. Wow, I really feel like you understand like why we're all here. Or wow, the way you describe that, the way you describe the vision of where we're going, I felt it in a new way. And really that kind of snowball of, I've never really sought out leaders or change makers and said, hi, I'd like to coach you. It's mostly people saying, hey, you should talk to Erin. Hey, you should talk to Erin. And over time, really accepting that as an aspect of my calling and hearing that message clearly from God, from my own intuition, like you have something to offer to folks. And I think it is also the idea that all of us are leaders, that there isn't this hierarchy of the people who are changing the world and the people who aren't, unless you actively choose to not participate in building a better world. And so I like that little glitch as well, where sometimes people think, oh, you know, Erin must only work with people who have this many Instagram followers or who are, you know, leading this massive thing. And that is true that I do work with those folks, but I also work with folks who are everyday people living like normal human lives, who have that feeling of, I know I'm here for greatness. I know I'm here to make a difference. And there's like a dream within me that I want to birth into the world. And I take, no matter the size of the impact, I take all of those dreams as very, very sacred and equally important.
I love that you named, like, leadership looks like so many things. Because there are people leading who don't do anything online, that don't have platforms in that way, but are like really leading change in their really small communities. So I love that you said it that way. And I'm curious if you had resistance coming into being someone who is a leader so young, if there was any like hesitation for you, or if you just like went full throttle into it.
It's definitely a both and, you know, I definitely take that perspective that we have many different aspects of self, because there was a part of me when I look back, I'm like, damn, that kid was audacious. Like I was just like, hey guys, climate change is happening. Like people are dying. Like we need to do something about it. And there, I was just so activated by everything that was happening in the world. And I had this really deep sense, almost this like this very, very anchored naivete that was like, love is the answer. This does not need to be happening. And that felt so clear within me. And that really drove me forward. And I also have just like, in the same way that other people are like obsessed with interior design or obsessed with, you know, growing a perfect plant or anything that other people are interested in, I have that kind of creative obsession with community and with building a better world. Like it's always just been so fascinating to me. And so In that way, I've kind of put in my quote unquote 10,000 hours in terms of just always being drawn to learn more. And then there was also the part of me that was so traumatized by aspects of my upbringing, was so conditioned to think that I was the problem, that I was bad, that I didn't deserve to have a voice, that my perspective didn't matter, that I had these very jarring moments where people saw me as a leader, but I would often, especially early on, reject that. I'll never forget when I was 13 years old in eighth grade, and there we were doing our eighth grade graduation ceremony, and they were picking the students who were going to lead the procession. And, you know, these students were sort of held up as like being positive role models for everybody else. They're going to lead the procession. And I remember a teacher came up to me and said, Aaron, we picked you. You're going to be one of the leaders. And I, in just true adolescent authenticity, I think I laughed in her face and said, no, I was like, but it was like that automatic reaction of just like, ha, no, like, no, I'm not doing that. And she was so shocked. And because I was such a quote unquote good kid, but it was like that involuntary trauma response of like, this is glitching the reality that I'm in. And like, there's no way that you see me in this way. And she was like, no, this is like a really big deal. And this is an honor. And this is why we see you in this way. And but it was so obvious when I look back on it now, I'm like, wow, I was so conditioned to see myself as like an outsider and as someone whose voice didn't matter. And I still have those moments. It's like just in different arenas these days where there's parts of me who are like, I would prefer to never be seen again. And then there's the part of me who's like, we have a mission. And also you love being seen and like you love sharing your voice and your perspective. So yeah. Tending to all those parts.
I love that you said it's a complicated relationship with being seen. I share that of like, I keep showing up as if like there's a compulsion, like I need to, but I'm like, I'm so fucking uncomfortable sometimes.
Like, totally. And sometimes I'll have these moments where I'm like, I build it in now. I know if I'm doing something that's a little bit expansive, I'm going on a bigger podcast, or I'm like releasing content that really means something to me, it's like, I've got a plan to be down for the count for minimum 24 hours, probably 48 to 72, where there are going to be moments where I'm in the fetal position, like wondering why I'm existing and like, like reaching for, like, I don't drink or do drugs anymore, but like reaching for like the obsessive YouTube watching or the piece of chocolate or the just like wanting to check out from my existence, because yeah, there's still so much within all of us, I think, that has that sense of like, oh, if I show up completely authentically, something bad's going to happen and I'm not going to be safe. And we can be anchored into like an eternal reality where that's not true on like a soul level, but the world continues to give us lots of evidence that we have things to be worried about. And so
yeah,
that tends to, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, the only truth is that we're all going to die. And so on like a primal level, it's like, we all know that. And the ostracizing from community triggers that, but like, that's still the reality. Even if we're eternally safe, like our animal self is like, no, like, yeah, I don't want to die.
is this Instagram post the moment
that I'm going to die?
Yes. Is this my extinction point? Yes.
Yes. I'm curious, just out of curiosity, what your YouTube, is it music videos? Like, what's your YouTube go-to?
Ooh, I love to watch. Well, I like a vibe. Like I was just watching a video this morning that my friend sent me of this like French designer who's like in his 70s or his 80s, and just him talking about his craft and like the beautiful homes that he designs and how he talks to the little, you know, the different artifacts that he collects. And it was just, it's like that, it had that beauty and that intentionality and that individuality energy. So I do like to just observe the life stories of people who are living their truth in a really bold, but also just sort of kind of refined way where they're not making a big deal of it. They're just like, yo, this is who I am. So I like to do that. And then I also will fully go into the whole like tiny house, regenerative design, people's like beautiful honoring of the earth, honoring of humanity, living situations is another place that I like to go.
You'll have to check out Jamie's tiny house if you haven't.
I haven't yet. And I've just like, it just emerged into my consciousness in the last like couple of days, I think, that this is a thing.
She was on Tiny House Nation. And so you might've actually seen it by accident. A lot of people are like, oh, I had no idea that that was her.
Wait, that would be hilarious because I've pretty comprehensively consumed that content.
You've probably seen it.
Okay. I'm going to make a note.
A note for everyone listening who's curious about the tiny house, because sometimes people ask on Instagram, if you Google yoga teacher tiny house, it is the first thing that comes up.
I'm almost certain that I've seen it.
You probably have. Let me know after.
How small this world is.
It really is. People, like literally people in our community will be like, oh my gosh, you're the tiny house girl. So I love that. I was going to say before the tiny house, you brought up the tiny houses, that I adore the earnestness that you show up in and that it sounds like your inner child just like had. And I relate to that so deeply. And it's been one of my most frustrating qualities about myself is like, it is so vulnerable to be so earnest about to care so deeply, like similarly to you. My first petition, although not about any climate change and world things, was in the fifth grade. And I like made sure everyone in my class signed this petition. And my teacher was like, can you stop doing this? You are being such a disruption. But I lived in the country, so I didn't really know about systemic injustice. Whereas you grew up in New York City, which is you're getting so much more access to different people, different socioeconomic classes, like so much more than I was exposed to quite young. And so I'm curious, like, what was your experience like growing up in New York City as a person coming of age?
I love New York. New York is, it's such a beautiful, magical, diverse place. And I still allow myself to go into the romanticization of it, of like, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. And I grew up in New York in the 90s, which was still a pretty rough situation in many ways, but also a really vibrant situation. So much art, so much culture, so many people coming to New York to feel safe, to be expressed as themselves. And it was, I grew up kind of on the edge of Harlem. And when I think about my upbringing, it is, being in New York really teaches you how to coexist with lots of other people. And it teaches you, like, people will often say that New Yorkers are maybe cold or maybe rude, but there's definitely a speed at which people move, but there's so much care within that speed. Like when I think about the way that New Yorkers take care of each other, it's like the amount of times that someone, like, I don't know if I would even make eye contact with a person before picking up the other end of their stroller and helping them carry their kid up the subway stairs. It's just like what you do, right? Or holding, you know, the arm of an old woman who's walking up the stairs or crossing the street, and these ways that there's just such a sense of, we do need each other because we are on top of each other. We, like, the only way that we can get space from our tiny apartments is to be out in public space, which is to be completely energetically overlapped with all these different people. And obviously there's all kinds of wildness that happens on the other end of the spectrum. But for me, being in New York, I think entrained my nervous system and just like on a deep psychological embodied level to feel safe in diversity and to feel, and to also know that there was always something that I didn't know, because there was so much nuance, like going to school with kids who were from so many different cultures, so many different countries, and just knowing, like, I don't know who you are. And there's a lot going on in your life. Even if you only live a couple blocks away from me, there's a lot going on in your life that I don't understand. Your parents speak a different language, like they work different jobs, and you seem to have different values. And so I'm really super, super grateful that I grew up in New York and that I have it as this place that keeps me honest and keeps me sort of humble in terms of thinking I know everything or getting too kind of myopic in one little cultural bubble.
I'm curious, because you talk about God so much, if you grew up with any religious like backgrounds, like how did that come into your reality?
Oh yeah. Super, super religious. Grew up with very, very, in a very Catholic context, with multiple generations of folks around me who were very deeply Catholic. And it's interesting because when I really think about it and feel into it now with a different analysis, it was less that there was this intense faith, and it was more that there was just this intense fear-based programming. Like even when I came out as queer and was navigating being LGBTQ in different ways, it felt to me a lot less that my parents and the people around me were like, being gay means that you are going to hell and I dislike you for that. It was more this sense of like, you're rocking the boat in any kind of way. Like you are individuating in a way that is scary. And it was almost even beyond the mind of not necessarily them thinking X, Y, and Z behaviors are good or bad, but almost this like bodily trauma response of like, no, don't do that. Don't be that. Don't do that. And this sense of just feeling so, so curtailed in my emotional expression and just in my authenticity and my capacity to feel just validated and loved as a kid, because the people around me were navigating their own religious trauma that was definitely influenced by other sort of socioeconomic factors that made them feel like there are core aspects of my authenticity that I have to sacrifice in order to be okay. And some of it's happening on a conscious level, but a lot of it's happening deeply, deeply subconsciously. And as a kid, I remember even being like 3 or 4 years old, one of my first memories, it's like I could still feel the hard, like the wooden pew on my back. And I was like laying in the pew in church, looking up at this giant, like old New York City church, and everybody else was singing a song. And I was singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And I was singing it with this, like, not with this conviction of like, you know, F all of you, like, I hate being here. It was just like, the vibe's off, the vibe's off, the vibe's off. I need to be in my own vibe. I need to bring a different energy here because I feel sick to my stomach otherwise. Like, I don't want to be, and I actually used to get sick in church. I wasn't a very sick kid, but I would get sick in church a lot because it felt like I was in a place where we were talking about love, but it didn't feel very loving.
How old were you whenever those first stages of coming out? Because I know coming out is like an unfolding process, but how old were you whenever you were like speaking to that in your life?
My experience with my gender and sexuality has been, I'm really grateful for it because I'm a very cerebral person, moon in Aquarius. Like I can tell a good story about anything. I can like bring out my like scroll length intellectual analysis. But my experience of gender and sexuality was very embodied. It was very like, I don't know what this is, but I have a feeling and I'm going to go towards what feels more aligned, more me, more warm, more loving. And so when I think about my gender, some trans, I was female assigned at birth. When I think about my gender, I can think about being even like 7 or 8 years old and like really, I love the 90s boys, like those floppy haired 90s boys, like Leonardo DiCaprio, River Phoenix, and having these moments where I was like, oh, I'm attracted to them, but also like, I want that vibe, like that sense of wanting to express in a certain way. I was also very into Aaron Carter, the lesser known younger brother of one of the Backstreet
Boys. Well, I know who Aaron Carter is. You don't have to say his name twice.
Amazing. I feel like the 90s kid vibe is such a particular energy.
Well, all of those guys were also so gender bendy in their own way.
Exactly.
I mean, I was like, am I attracted to them? Or are they like in that beautiful in-between that's so fascinating to me?
Totally. And when I look back, I'm able to see like, oh, that is me, because I am very masculine, but I'm also very feminine. And that ability to kind of have this like masculine core with this feminine fluidity around and through and on top of it is definitely, that's the comfy place I found in my gender identity and my gender expression. And I was, you know, a kid growing up, like playing basketball in the streets of New York City, like wearing my baggy basketball shorts, like trying to find my swagger and my style and my gender expression then. But it wasn't really until I was in my late teens that, and really I left the context of living with my family and went off to college and was able to, I think that was only when it was psychologically safe for me, like parts of me that I think were not perceiving of aspects of myself were then felt safer to explore. And that's when fell in love with an amazing girl, and sort of the rest was history in terms of just then being kind of initiated into being in a context where it was okay to be myself and I could explore. But even saying that, when I think back on being 14 years old and I had this amazing boyfriend, he ended up being the captain of the football team, but there was this girl who was my neighbor. And I used to always play this game in my head. I was like, would I rather hang out with my boyfriend or this really cool girl who's my neighbor? And I was like, the cool girl who's my neighbor for sure. So there was definitely, but I love that too, because it's not about going back and saying like, I should have known sooner. It's just like honoring this unfolding of identity that is still continuing, I think, for me and for all of us.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I shared with you before we started this, I didn't even know I was queer until 2 years ago. And then I start looking back and I'm like, how did I not know this? It was so obvious. And like friendship breakups that were so dramatic and so painful. I was like, okay, maybe there was more going on there than I realized at the time. You know, like there was a lot of those moments where you're like, it was so innocent, which is also so beautiful to realize how innocent those feelings were, and like that they weren't even like, I guess something that I see a lot of people talk about in queer sexuality is feeling like very wrong. And because I wasn't out in a time where I was being like told I was bad for my feelings, like I kind of bypassed that. I just internalized that and didn't know on a conscious level. But looking back, like all of those moments feel so innocent and so sweet.
Totally. Yeah. It's like, I see it with like sepia tone, like vintage film overlay and
very Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Oh my God. Taylor Swift. And it's so organic is the feeling for me, is it's like, there was no distortion. It was like authentic, loving expression and connection and honoring what was there without. And I was very resistant. Eventually I was fine to be like, to say I was queer, but it was, that didn't even feel relevant to me until there was massive opposition to who I was. I didn't even really want to put a label on it. I was like, this is the experience I'm having right now. I'm in love with this person and this is how I feel. And I think that that's like how kids are, that innocence of like, I don't need to over-identify. I'm just in a now moment experience.
Yeah. I very much resonate with that of, I feel like I only identify myself when it feels like it's on, and not in a way of betraying myself, but for the benefit of another person, either having someone to be like, okay, I'm adjacent to this person in some way, but it's been other people who are like, but what are you though? That has been the most interesting part of the process. Cause I'm like, I don't know that it matters if I'm just doing what feels true.
Completely. Yeah. And even in interviews, like there's often these moments where I'm like, okay, I'm going to use certain words that help people understand who I am, but that's not the main label that I'm carrying around in my life.
I want to talk about liberation, because I feel like identifying there's so much there in terms of being liberated to an identity and then being liberated from an identity. And I'm curious, I'm curious how you found God, because it sounds like you didn't really resonate with the way that God was presented to you as a young person, but also how you have used your relationship to God to liberate yourself from really small boxes that don't fit all of you.
I love God. God's the best. My experience with God, you know, it was when I think about being raised Catholic, I don't even have that many memories of being told who God was or who Jesus was. There was just like a very oppressive vibe and a very limited, very limited narrative. I'm just thinking about even, I remember being very aware that after Easter that like Jesus came back and he was on earth for another 40 days, but it was like, we skipped over that. It's like, as soon as we had this like giant sort of like sadistic, you know, torture scene played out, it was like, okay, back to Adam and Eve, and not getting to actually celebrate that like Jesus did come back and there was this like gloriousness and this freedom and like, what did he choose to talk about on the other side of that experience that he had? And there was an overall energy of just a lot of limitation and lack. And I went through all the cycles. I went through the cycle of being very sort of scientifically atheistic, like read a bunch of Richard Dawkins. I had a major French existentialist phase where I was reading Sartre and Camus. Like I still love them, but I loved them when I was like 16, 17, like the only poster on my wall was an Albert
16.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like mid 20s and you're like 16 reading this.
Oh, completely. I'm reading like, yeah, just these French philosophers who are like just talking about how nothing is real and nothing matters. And these Bertrand Russell, like why I'm not a Christian. Just, I still am super into philosophy and was trying to make sense of like, this institution is whack. It's not actually embodying the love that is supposedly it's that like, I organically feel is the core of the human experience. And so I went through those different cycles and tried to push the church away. But when I think about it now, it's like I had a connection with wonder. I had a connection with some kind of life force essence where I was like, always like, oh my God, look at that bird. Look at that tree. Like anything's possible, guys. Like that. And in saying that in very dark circumstances as well, when I think back, it's like I had that connection to the feeling and the experience of God. And then it wasn't really until my mid-20s that God just started to call me back. I started to ask deeper questions as an activist about like what was actually going to truly create change. And it started to bring me into understanding metaphysics on a deeper level and that there was more than the physical realm that could be moved around and influenced in different ways. And that brought me to a point where I also was realizing that the people I was following, Martin Luther King Jr., Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Abraham Joshua Heschel, Malcolm X, like all of these sort of civil rights leaders that I was so inspired by, they were real cozy with God. They loved God and they knew that their mission was divine. And so there was that thread for me. And it wasn't until my mid-20s that I had a moment where I can't even intellectually tell you exactly how I got there, but I surrendered my life to God. I was like, God, take me. I'm yours. There is again that innocence. I wasn't like, I know what God is and this is what will happen when I do this. I was just like, I'm doing it. It was like, it was organic to be talking to my creator in that way. And it was a very potent moment. The door of the house that I was in, the apartment I was in, flew open and all this light shined in. And it was just this really, and even that I was like, oh, cool, that's happening. Like it was all very innocent and light. And then my life began to radically, radically, radically change within days. It was just everything was being taken out that wasn't aligned. And in some ways, that's what the shift of the last year has been, is actually realizing what happened when I gave my life to God. And it wasn't just my knowledge of metaphysics that was helping me create the life that I wanted. It was this devotional relationship with my creator that I didn't even necessarily realize completely how deep it was until recently.
I have like a full body resonance because I understand, like, even though my experience with God is different in how I found God and then, you know, going away, then coming back. I just, you know, there are people, my father included, who's a very radical Christian. I wouldn't even put him in the evangelical category because he is so brilliant. The man has like an IQ of 148. He's so smart, like to his detriment, like very much so to his detriment. And he is such a student of the Bible in a way that's like more mad scientist than anything else. And he's an ex-addict, so now he's addicted to theology, but a very particular kind of theology. So he's like, you know, Jesus, not only did he come back for 40 days, like, but he already came back. Like revelation came back. Like he's like, the end times already happened. We're living in like utter grace. Like he has all, he really wanted me to know at Christmas this year that he doesn't think I'm going to hell because he doesn't think that that's real. And he, you know, he's very intense still, but he doesn't think being queer is right, I guess. But he's like, it's all predestined and everything is grace. And so it's interesting to see. I actually don't know why I brought him up now that I'm talking about him, because he endears me.
His energy feels amazing, and because it's that ferocity of like that particular conviction and commitment to God and the centrality of it. It sounds like that's
yes,
like, that's the center of his life.
Oh my gosh. I mean, there are ways that I wish it was softer, you know, and like, and
I'm restraining myself from asking about his astrology.
He is, both of my parents are Pisces. And I've asked for his, birth time, and my grandmother is in late stages Alzheimer's. So she doesn't really know who he is anymore. And my grandfather, my grandfather is her primary caregiver. And so he's like stressed out and old and trying to like care for this little old lady who just sings. That's all she does is sing hymns. And so, my dad is just like, I'll find the birth certificate eventually. I'm not going to bother with it and stress my dad out about it. But I see my dad and his conviction, and also in the way that he's like just so extreme, like such a radical being. He can't even go to a church because he's like, tithes are for the Levites only. And if you understand the Bible, then you would know that only Levites should be collecting tithes. And like, he has such an intricate knowledge of the Bible that like, he's angry at all pastors for getting it wrong. So even though I disagree with his theology, it's really, really interesting. But I'm trying to think of why I brought him up in the first place.
We were speaking about the resonance of that like devotion and that full body feeling.
Yes. Okay. So in my life, I just so understand that like, I haven't actually spoken about my relationship with God publicly that much, because I realized I did that for so long as a Christian that I was almost exploiting my story and my intimate relationship with God for other people in this like savior type role. And so over the past couple of years, it's become very intimate to me. And like you said, very felt. Like as a child, it was very felt. And like my experience with the extremes of that was more so from traumatic imprints from being a little person and not from my relationship with God. Like I always knew God loved me. I always knew that I was a child of God. Like all of those things just made sense to me. And my issue in evangelicalism was like that I questioned everything. Like I would go along with it for a little while and then I would question, and they're like, you can't say that. Like you can't ask that. And, my dad actually calls it like being a maverick, which I think is his projection onto me. Like, I think he feels as a maverick. And so he's like, you're my maverick. You know, we're twins. We're very much alike in a lot of ways. Like I look exactly like him. Wow. So, well, he's also older and a man and whatever, but I just feel that resonance so deeply. And you put it into words that feels like a yes, like that there's a surrender to the divine mystery. I'm curious if you have entered in, and everyone, thanks for listening to my cameo on my dad, Joe, if you're listening.
Shout out Joe.
He's not listening. he muted me on Facebook because the things I post make him sad. And so I'm like, I respect your boundaries, Dad. I also muted you on Facebook because the things you post make me sad.
You belong to yourself, Dad. Great practicing sovereignty.
Yes. So whenever I first interacted with your work, I was really curious because you talk about God so freely, and it seems to be like, again, like this deeply devotional relationship. And also I was like, oh God, like what's attached to that? Like what theology is attached to that? It made me very skeptical and guarded. And I'm sure you get that a lot from people who were post-religious, but also I think you get that from people who are like activists and in social justice. And so I'm curious how you like blended these two things and like liberation from the parts of both that were not liberatory, to say the least.
Oh, it's such a beautiful question. And in many ways, I'm still living it. I feel like I'm living it every day. There's like new data, new experiences. And that is where my connection with God comes in. I'm like, yo, you know, put me in coach, but like, tell me what to do, like guide me. And having that sense of having reclaimed the relationship with God, but also reclaiming my intuition, reclaiming my sense of like what feels right within my being and what feels like I'm putting myself in a box or I'm trying. It's like I need something from myself or from someone else. And that kind of constrictive energy, I've more and more developed a relationship with the difference between when I'm trying to kind of impose something or trying to make it a certain way versus when I'm letting myself be that crazy mad scientist who just really freaking believes something and wants to share it and feels excited about it. And honestly, identifying more as an artist has helped me with that as well, where it's like, this is my expression right now, not my unified theory of everything. And also being really deeply willing to quote unquote make mistakes or to be messy, to be illegible, to, as Walt Whitman would say, to contain multitudes. You know, he said, do I contradict myself? Well, very well then, I contradict myself. And getting more comfortable releasing that perfectionism so that I have that grace for myself of like showing up in an authentic, evolving way. And it's funny when you were listing the different people that might be triggered by me, I also include the religious people. Like I just did a little scroll through the filtered DMs the other day. And this guy was like, the God you're talking about is not my God. Do not say that's my God. And I'm really grounded in sovereignty and love, which is really just God's rules, like love and free will. Everything is love. God loves us all, and we have choice. And so I really take respecting people's free will on a deeply energetic level so seriously that I think the more I share, the people who are open to it, they don't feel that constriction or that trying to put them in a box, which for others is very scary because it's like, wait, what's Aaron's deal? Like, when's the other shoe going to drop? Like, he's talking about God, but what does that actually mean? And yeah, it's definitely been a deeply iterative process where I know that the more integrated I am within myself as well, it's like I had to come forth and speak completely honestly about my relationship with God because I was telling people anything's possible. Like, we're here to change the world. Like, and I realized how central my relationship with God was to the miracles that I had experienced. And so, a lot of conviction and then a lot of just really making a lot of space. I just want there to be a lot of space, as you say, for everything to belong.
Yeah. In the last year, I've seen this happens a lot whenever there's collective uncertainty. And I've been very curious of why do people fall into fundamentalism? What happens when there's a collapse into fundamentalism, which is actually what I think it is. I think that there's very little inner stability, and the stability was in whether someone was like in the new age and then they fall into fundamentalism and extreme religion. I get really curious about where there was lack of safety that created a collapse that the fundamentalism establishes safety for someone. So if we think about developmentally, that makes a lot of sense to have a lot of rules and structures and boundaries from the outside to hopefully allow you to have a sense of self and to be able to set boundaries. But whenever we don't have that, and then we enter into life or mysticism or whatever it is, and then like we start to see things in the world that don't match up to like what we thought we were like, quote, manifesting or whatever we want to say. I think that there's this like collapse, but I see it on the other side as well. I see it on the far extreme, like the far, far left. And well, the far left and the far right, but then also like the strange intersection of like new age movement. I'm like, I don't know where to place that. Like maybe it's like where the far left and the far right intersect on like the circle. I'm just curious how you've seen these extremes. How do I want to ask this? I guess I'll just say I see a lack of safety, a lack of inner safety lead to collapsing into fundamentalism. And I don't just mean religion. And I'm curious how you have cultivated inner safety for yourself to keep yourself integrated and keep yourself in check with like that inner spaciousness that keeps you from rigidity on both in the political side, which it sounds like maybe in your past you were there, but also from the religious side, because it's really easy whenever, like when COVID happened and the pandemic kind of shut things down, I saw a lot of fear give rise to extremism on both sides.
Completely. Analysis on this is so, to me, it's so spot on and it's so intricate and fascinating. I'm just on a meta level grateful to be having this conversation. And I totally agree. You know, it was interesting to watch how everybody navigated the simultaneous like constricting of their reality and then the emergence of their deeper shadows during 2020. And I totally agree that it's like we cling to things to create stability within this reality, you know, the Maya, the Dunya, whatever you call it. It's like there is temporary relief in identification. And I've had that many times in my life. For me, like coming out and being queer in different ways and then identifying as that and finding my community and being really like radically part of that and being really, you know, very radically leftist in my politics and in my activism, that was safety. That probably kept me alive through really intense moments, but then it collapsed out because it's not rooted, from my perspective, it's not rooted in eternal truth. And for me, the older I get, and I'm so willing to be wrong now too. I'm just like, I don't know, God, surprise me. Like what I think is the reality and is true and is providing security for me now may also continue to dissolve. And I think that is the nature of this life cycle that we're in. But I have found more and more peace and flexibility and fluidity in identifying more on a soul level than on a physical level. And in terms of creating that safety within myself, it really was this like radical commitment of knowing, just feeling within my bones, like I have to love myself so thoroughly if I want to survive this world. And I got to get on my own side on a whole new level. And sometimes I call self-love agreeing with God, because it's like there is also an energy and a creator who feels the way that I'm trying to feel about myself already is part of my experience. And it's looked like very basic human things of like, we are going to drink enough water. We are going to nourish our body in consistent ways. Like we are going to try to have a bedtime so that life feels more stable. We're going to wear our blue light blocking glasses so that we feel less frazzled, like really fundamental, like small things that just start to create a sense of consistency, which a lot of us didn't have as kids, obviously. And I don't feel like I had. And then the deep shadow work and the inner child work, saying, I call it calling a council of selves, being like, okay, any versions of Aaron Rose that are here, please come forward. Tell me your beef. What's going on? What do you need? And sometimes that looks like, you know, being in a deep now moment connection with my 8-year-old self, who's like, yo, I am freaked out. And like, I need to be with you like piggyback style for a while, and being able to be multidimensional in that way, where there's just this kind of constant practice now of noticing, where am I withholding love for myself? And then where can I allow that rehydration in? And I just have a lot of compassion for what we're all moving through, because everybody, it's like we're all trying to come back to love, and that is what creates stability, but we're doing it in a way that is often reinforcing separation. Yeah.
It's been really fascinating to learn about attachment theory this past year, which is really informing my understanding of what's happening whenever people do have that collapse. It's like, where's the healthy attachment to self, to God, to Mother Earth? I think that that's something that I've really been realizing as I heal my own attachment wounds. I had a great disorganized attachment, which has just really not served me. Same. And like, this is
I
want to
be here.
Stressful.
I don't want to be here. Come close. Get away.
Yes. Oh my gosh. It's like,
I'm never leaving. I'm on the run.
Which creates so much shame, like has in my life, of like, what's wrong with me? There's something wrong with me. Even whenever no one was reinforcing that feeling, like I can't get what I want, is very upsetting. And so healing that attachment, I first found, I think God was my first healthy attachment. And whenever I left evangelicalism and it felt like God died and it felt like my community died, my marriage died, like so many things, like I died because my identity was so connected to God, to think that whenever I became an atheist, it was like, I don't even exist anymore. Like nothing is real. Again, kind of like you were, mine came about 10 years after yours.
I've had a couple nothing is real moments recently. Yes. It's fine. It cycles back around for all of us.
It's continual ego death. And it was like, I know for people who haven't been in evangelicalism, I don't know if they can understand like the full ego death of realizing everything in your life is a lie. But then coming back around to be like, oh, God, I can still have a relationship with God. In reintroducing one of my people who hold space for me on a somatic level, somatic energetic worker, they told me that it's really beautiful that I developed a secure attachment to God in my youth, which I very much had. And developmentally, there needs to be healthy attachment to other and self before that healthy attachment to God can really sustain. And so I've been thinking so much about that and seeing people, you know, go and do Kundalini classes and then have a manic episode. And I'm like, okay, not that that energy isn't real. I really believe that there is divine energy channeling through. But sometimes when there's so much up and out energy, our connection to God, and there's no stability in the body and stability connected to earth and to other, what do we do? That energy has nowhere to go and can't be held. And I have so many thoughts about 5D and mental illness, what's happening right now. That's like not, maybe not for this podcast, because I'm also just speculating, but healthy attachment just feels so important to keep us out of the radical extremes.
Completely. And I do think that, like, for me, quantum physics has been deeply supportive, because I actually have an intellectual understanding now of like, oh, there's multiple dimensions. Like, I'm a soul having a human experience. And therefore, it makes sense that like every time an aspect of my life collapses in on itself and I move on to a new experience, there's more grace there where I'm like, well, I'm having a human experience. Like, there are so many realms. And when I feel the fundamental realms, like, I have full body chills. It's like, it makes hell real for people, because it is literally a dimension, I believe, that where you go in and as you accept and you agree and you consent to certain beliefs and ideas, you start to have that experience and the world gets very scary and becomes very self-fulfilling, because there's just more and more evidence of how there is a fight going on and there is, like, you know, and you just, it is almost like an abusive dynamic where there's this deeper, and I know that you've spoken very eloquently about that. It's like you get pulled deeper and deeper and deeper into something that validates itself as like the only solution to a problem that it has perhaps created, even well-meaningly, on just like a passing trauma along to the next kind of person level.
I'm so curious how you navigate. Well, I'll start by saying, I have realized how clearly I can see this happening. And I have, because of my experience with people using, like, I see this in your life as like a way to abuse and manipulate, I've been very cautious to speak to what I see. And I'm realizing that I'm being asked to start speaking to what I see and to no longer participate in these dynamics. And whereas before I would entertain them because I wanted people to feel belonging and to feel connected. And it's becoming less and less an option for me. And you're someone I see really modeling, no longer being available for these dynamics while still having so much love to people and not saying like, you're just in an alternate reality and you're just in your own living hell. Like that's, I can't imagine you ever saying that.
But I could say that in a way of like, you are literally in an alternate reality, because we're all in alternate realities. And so yes. I'm seeing something. And if you want to hear more, also being a projector in human design helps me so much, because I cannot push things on people. Like I'm like the anti-evangelical, like I cannot assert my perspective on other people. I invite. And so I do a lot of that communication, even just consent-based communication, like, hey, are you willing to hear this right now? And even in any workshop that I do, it's like, there's a choice point at the beginning of the workshop of like, I'm choosing to be here. I'm open to hearing what's going to be shared. I'm going to take care of myself if I don't want to be hearing what's being shared, and just really deeply respecting other people's free will, because, you know, it is like that drowning metaphor. It's like, if some part of my consciousness, quote unquote, thinks someone is drowning, the surest way to just harm myself is to, is to like get in the water in that way that then I just end up drowning as well. And also, who am I to say that I know what's going on for someone on that individual level? Because I can have perspective, but I truly don't. And I feel the curriculum right now, as you've identified so powerfully, is sovereignty. And, you know, anything that compromises that, I feel like it's just a no-go these days.
Yeah. So how do you see that something's a no for you then? And you're like, these waters aren't for me. I love you, but no, thank you. Whenever the person is insisting that you get in the waters, that you swim in the territory, that you post a certain thing on social media, because I've had people in my DMs, Aaron, telling me to cancel you.
God bless them.
So, and you're not the only person, of course, you know, like who people are like, they're doing this wrong or whatever it is. And I know that you've experienced so much of that, especially in the last year, especially since you've been really rooting in your sovereignty, which kind of like happens, it seems. And I'm curious how you just say, I love you. I'm not participating in this.
Basically like that. It's interesting. Like I've definitely been called out. In some ways I've been called out more in the last year, but also, I mean, I was posting in 2017, 2018 about unconditional love as a social justice strategy. And people were like, F you know, this is spiritual bypassing. And so I've had many cycles and iterations of that, you know,
like not new to this.
Yeah. And, but it feels new again, because the collective context keeps shifting. And, you know, I think being countercultural in the ways that I have been, the phrase that came to me a couple of months ago, and I was working with my designer, was sacred glitch, and really seeing how me being a glitch is something I can't avoid. It's like the context changes and then I change, and then I'm still throwing a wrench in someone's gears by being myself. And I've learned how to, like, you know, I've deeply released martyrdom, and I think I'm continuing to release those layers where it's not like, oh, I'm always going to have a hard time, or, you know, accepting mistreatment, but it is sort of embracing, like, this is part of my human experience, is that people are reacting to me in a strong way. And I found a lot of peace with my internal integration as well. Like, someone might hit my Instagram these days and be like, who the heck is this like random white dude talking about God? And when I look at his stories, like, there's like a Yoko Ono picture and some quote about how everything's going to be okay. And like, how the heck where does he come off saying that? Because he's not doing social justice work. And it's like, I've been doing social justice work since I was 15. My business, my life is structured to be deeply regenerative and reparative. And I'm constantly auditing that for myself and doing that internal work. And so I feel at peace with myself. And I know that, like, I can't possibly describe every single perspective that I have in a way that's going to be digestible to everybody. And I, again, that word that you use so much is grace. And if someone's coming through and saying, hey, like, I'm really upset because I don't see you posting about this, I do have an agreement with God where I'm like, please only show me critique if it's actually helpful. If it's just abuse, then I don't need to see it. And I actually have crazy stories of not even realizing I was being called out, and completely missing like entire things that were happening because I was being shielded from it. But there are moments where it was last summer. Yeah. Someone months later was like, I was so amazed, so impressed by how you handled that. And I was like, handled what?
And I don't even perceive it. What, have you seen Westworld?
Yeah.
It never looks like nothing to me. It's like a joke in our house. Whenever we see something we don't like, we just say, looks like nothing to me.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like, and it's like that fine line between being divinely protected and then being dissociated. And I'm always looking at that. I'm like, yes. God, for real though, show it to me if I need to see it. Like, I'm ready to, I'm willing to deal with it. And I think there's always it's like, we're learning about real deep relationship. Like, any of my closest relationships, we disappoint each other and surprise each other all the time. There are moments where I'm like, why didn't you do that thing? Or like, there's aspects of me that want them to be different and I'm surprised by how they're expressing in a certain way. But that's not what makes the relationship safe or meaningful. It's like the depth of love that's there. So I also feel like I'm definitely modeling that for people, of like, of finding trust and connection without being able to comprehensively predict who someone is and what they stand for, continuing to grow with my community, taking their feedback, and also knowing that I answer to God and really having that prayer where I'm like, and that humility of like, please, please guide me. If I'm meant to be doing something different, I will. And if not, then I'm gonna keep doing me.
Yeah. I love your discernment. And I think you're someone who really, I have just been very inspired by in that, that it seems like you are taking feedback and you are learning. And also you're not available, like you said, I'm not available for abuse.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important for people. Like, well, I'll speak for myself. It's really important for me because my experience is that people have a lot of assumptions about me when they see me. They don't often assume trauma or any of the difficulties because I'm really committed to living in my freedom. And that can be so activating for people. And I'm also just like deeply curious your experience walking through the world as a white man right now. Like how is, and people don't know that you're queer, don't know your experience. If you could like summarize that in a sentence, what would you say?
Sure. Yeah. And I deeply resonate with what you said about like people projecting all this stuff on you, where it's like someone wrote to me once and they were like, the only reason you could say this is because you've never suffered a day in your life. And it's like, the only reason I'm here teaching on what I teach and sharing what I share is because the first half of my life was like a horror film, and the depth of darkness that I had to climb my way out of is so comprehensive. But I'm also not interested in like trotting around my trauma being like, here's my card for like why you should accept me, because I was abused and traumatized in these ways that are connected to institutionalized oppression. It's like part of my glitch now is like, maybe you do think I'm a basic white bro who doesn't know what the heck's going on.
Just another Aaron Carter. Exactly. Out here.
Aaron's party. That was his, what was that? His single, Aaron's party, come and get it.
I have to share, in the fourth grade, I had a boyfriend named Tony. Shout out Tony. And our song was Aaron Carter's Candy. I want candy.
That song.
And I went by Candy that year. Like I was like, everyone in the class shall call me Candy now. So
I love that. I feel like when we hang out in person, our like inner adolescents are going to have a really fun time.
So much fun. Yes.
So to answer your question about what it's like to be a white man, well, first of all, I want to like drop into the octave of seriousness and acknowledge that like I used to experience a huge amount of harassment and violence because I was gender nonconforming in different ways, and or people read me like as queer or gay in ways that they don't necessarily do anymore. And that shifted partially because of my integration of my trauma, my release of being in that victim story. And it also shifted because I look different now and because I'm embodied in a different way. And it's something that's still very present in my reality, like that relief feeling and knowing that I am more legible and less threatening to people now. And that impacts my life in just immeasurable ways. And that's something I'm always keeping in my mind when I speak about this, because I know that other people, simply because of how they're embodied, you know, they're having a very different experience. And so anchoring that, and then we'll go to the levity frequency now of it's when people, especially being a projector, if people have no context on me, I'm very, very confusing to them. Like if people aren't like, hey, this is Aaron. People often think I'm like an 18-year-old, like 21, I'm 30, like 21-year-old kid. They'll be like, they'll talk to me like I'm like the person who works at a place, because I just have, to some people, a very youthful face and energy, and they almost like treating me like a little punk, like, oh, who's this little kid like working on his homework in this coffee shop? And I'm like, I'm writing Instagram posts for the people, guys. The Lord's work. So there's that. And then there's moments where, you know, like I can see if there's a moment where like I have my mask kind of off, or I'm wearing like, my like construction worker boots, and people are like, that dude must be like a totally detached frat bro construction worker dude. There's such a spectrum. And at this point it's like, I am so multitudinous that I can't even control it. So I try to just enjoy the experience and then use the glitches as teachable moments if I feel called to, or otherwise just pass through like a like a ghost in the wind. They never even knew me.
I love that you're describing like the extremes and then the nuances of expression. And when it feels more safe and less safe and just more interesting to move in the world, like I would love to have a day where I felt like a construction worker bro and just see how it felt.
Totally. Yeah. And it's like, that's part of the human experience is getting to have that spectrum. And then also like on a deeper level, I love being a man and I love that I am someone who people sometimes might see and be like, who's this dude? And then they're met with someone who's like, no, I'm emotionally here. And I'm present and I'm anchored and I validate you and I love you and whatever you've been through, like I see you and that should not have happened. And like the level of witnessing and care that I'm able to provide people in a way that helps heal their relationship with the masculine. I feel really grateful for that. Mm.
I know you know this, we've spoken about this before, but energetic wholeness is so important. And I think that it's just such a gift that people who have a queer experience in some way get to have in a way that I didn't have previously whenever I wasn't in tune with that part of myself. And it was always like, I'm being too masculine, you know, and like all of these. And also I'm a very petite person. Like people meet me and are like, oh my God, you're a lot smaller than I expected you to be. And I think my hair being big, and I don't know what people are expecting, but that's the feedback I get is like, whoa, you're small. And being in a very small petite body with like big curly blonde hair and a really bubbly personality, but being very able to be very direct and clear and precise can really throw people off. And also, I think presenting in the way that I present allows me to be that way with much less projection than people who have more of a masculine presentation. Mm. Because I don't get called a bitch nearly as much as a woman in a larger body. Mm. And so it's so interesting just to think about expression, physical expression, emotional expression. Yes. Okay. I have so many thoughts on that, but I want to do rapid fire.
Okay.
And I'm wondering before we do that, is there any thread in the conversation that still feels like untied in to you?
Mm. Well, part of the beauty is it feels like this is a conversation we could have for, and I feel like we will have in a really deep ongoing way. And so I feel really grateful for everything we've touched upon and just want to send love to the hearts of everybody who's listening and just, yeah, hope that the medicine of like permission to have your own experience of your life, have your own experience of God, have your own experience of your identity, and that, you know, our lived experience of love and of feeling that grace and feeling that safety and that peace that is available in relationship with the divine, that if there's anybody who's been kind of walking on the edge of that, just like if you need a permission slip to know how deeply inherently loved you are, then this is it. Mm.
Yes. And I wanted to say before we move on that I'm so grateful that you have an expression that feels quite safe to you right now. I know not everyone listening might have access to that in this moment, but just like person to person, I'm really grateful that you have that.
Thank you. Thank you. And likewise, it's such a joy to watch you do your work and to express and to also know, as we spoke about, that like, we've got the sort of core stability, but we're playing on some edges that feel very dangerous to different parts of ourselves. And there's a lot of bravery that is involved in like forgetting that you're safe and then remembering again and being in that ongoing process.
Yes. Well, you've answered this question already in some ways, but what is your spiritual background?
Spiritual background, child of God, infinitely beloved by the multiverse. Human being having a spiritual experience, spiritual being having a human experience, raised by Catholics, just inherited the legacy of Christianity's political, social, political, structural attempt to separate people from relationship with God and found my way back again.
Yes. Prodigal
son style, baby.
So good. How do you know when you know?
Oh, it feels like peace. My mentor said to me once, truth hits like peace. Even if there's an immediate reaction after that's like, there's like that moment. It's like, whoa, that's what it is. So it's like that oceanic now moment. And then often followed by a sense of like self-respecting forward movement. Like, all right, there's a next step and I feel ready to do it.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. What identities have you had to let go of to own your fullness today?
Ooh, just about every single one of them. Honestly, every single one of them. Because all of them are just, they're just a little things that I thought were everything to me. They're just, God's like holding me like a little multidimensional disco ball. And then every once in a while, it's like the light catches something and it's like, oh, look at that cute thing about this being that I made. And I've been like trying to live my entire life as that one little sparkle when there's actually so many. And there's so much more that I don't know. Like there's so much I don't know about who I am going to continue to become.
I love that. Like there's so much more that I don't know. Thank God.
Honestly, gosh. Otherwise we'd be done. Like if we were done, we'd be like done. Done with living.
Yeah, like gone.
And I would like to
not
be
alive.
Here for a while.
Yeah, same. What are you most enjoying learning right now?
I am most enjoying learning. I'm really enjoying learning more about the mycelium network of mushrooms, and like I just it never ceases to amaze me to learn about the fractality of the universe, like the fact that. Like we're all telepathically connected as humans and the mushrooms are all talking to each other and they're bringing all the information to all the plants and the plants are talking to us and like learning about the communication that and the ways that the physical reality speaks to my metaphysical understanding of oneness, but diversity in oneness is something that I always really deeply love to explore. And it hits me like it's new every time.
Have you seen that documentary, which I'm certain you have? I can't even remember the name. It's about the mycelium network. It came out like a year and a half ago.
I think it's called Fantastic Fungi. And yes. I haven't seen it yet because sometimes I like save something until I'm really ready to just like completely, because I just get very obsessed. And sometimes I hold myself back from obsession because I know that watching that movie is going to change my life. So I feel like I'm going to watch it soon.
Yeah, it was one of the last, it was at a small place called the Moxie where I live. And it was like they do like indie films and things like that. And so I saw it there like right before pandemic times. And it was like one of my last, like going to the movies situations. And so, yeah, it's really good. You might become obsessed.
Amazing. I'm sure I will.
Yes.
I have a very intense personality in that way.
I do as well. And so I'm like, I will learn everything about this today and tomorrow.
Like, I like show much. Up with a mushroom tattoo, like wearing a shirt that says like, I'm a fun guy on it.
Oh my God.
And then the next time you interview me, I'm like, the identity I've recently had to release is the fact that I'm also a mushroom.
Yes. So do you own the shirt? I'm a fun guy or is this?
No, I'm projecting into the future of like me creating an entire identity around mushrooms.
Okay. I'll just, as a friend, I will just be observing for this and just might pull you back or not. This might be the next iteration of you.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. I'm looking forward to it.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Yes.
What the good Lord wishes for my life, I'm willing to do it.
That was me in Spiral Dynamics over the holiday I took over Christmas. I was like, I now know everything about this. I'm obsessed with this. And then it's been since January. I haven't looked at it again. Just amazing. Like, it's how I get. Okay. Next question is, what does grace mean to you? Another obsession.
Oh, grace means that we can always begin again. And not only that we can, but that we are. Mm-hmm. Every single particle in existence is popping in and out of existence multiple times a second, going back to what someone calls source, what someone called God. Like everything that seems tangible is just being very responsible and respectful of the choices we've made about what our reality should look like. Like this table could be so many other things besides a table, but we've chosen that it's a table right now. And all these particles, they seem so solid, but they're just dancing between here and God all the time. And so every single second means we can begin again and we're being embraced by the divine in every moment. And so there's nothing that's too big to overcome no matter what's happened.
What's your go-to coffee shop order whenever they think you're a frat bro?
Ooh, it used to just be like hot black Americano, but now I'm letting a little bit of levity into my life. And I'm light on the caffeine because I definitely am prone to being overstimulated. But when I decide that I'm going to have one of those days, I love a coffee shop that has like a really good cold brew and a really good homemade nut milk and some kind of sweetener and it just hits your, it just, it hits you like a bomb, and it's so sweet and so cold and so connected to the earth. I love mm-hmm. it.
I have to be really well rested before I have one of those, because it jacks me up and I am just lit the whole day.
Completely.
And it's like a before noon drink for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I can't do caffeine after like 11 a.m. Otherwise I'm paying for it at 3 a.m. the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, I am excited for some cold brew weather. I will say that. So the final question is, what do you want?
Oh, space to breathe. Mm-hmm. Like the embodied feeling. In some ways I want for nothing, but in some ways what I want is wanting for nothing. Mm. It's that feeling of contentment that for me is embodied in like waking up and just feeling cozy in your body and feeling excited about your to-do list rather than stressed out about it. It's like a really good hug from someone where you're not trying to be anywhere else. It's like hanging out around a campfire with your friends, like not thinking about what time it is. Just those moments out of time where you're out of time, but you're not dissociated from your human experience. You're very, very, very much in your body and enjoying all that it has to offer.
Mm, like so present, time doesn't exist. Like so in your body, time doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Mm. Anything else that you would like to say before we go?
I don't think so. This has been just such a delight. It's so beautiful to talk with you. Thank you for doing the work that you're doing and for being a comrade on the journey in this human life and for creating a platform to have these conversations.
Mm. Thank you for tuning in to Everything Belongs. If you loved this episode, please subscribe and leave me a 5-star review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app so that others might find this podcast too. You can find the show notes and find out more about today's guests by going to madisonmorgan.com/podcast. And before you go, I want to tell you about Everything Belongs, the membership. For only $17 a month, join my monthly workshop gatherings that will serve as a playground and sacred circle to learn and explore a spirited life fully expressed in your worth, wholeness, and power. Members will have the opportunity to vote on podcast guests, pick workshop topics, send in questions to be answered live on the call, get a monthly journaling PDF, and members-only access to all of my coaching programs. If you're looking for a place to ground, gather, play, and explore all of the conversations shared here on Everything Belongs, then this is a space for you. For more information, go to madisonmorgan.com/membership. And if you're not following and chatting with me over on Instagram, please go do that now and DM me and let me know your favorite part of this episode. I cannot wait to hear from you. And until next time, remember that curiosity can be a portal to a rich life where everything truly belongs. See you next time.